I've been a primary author of two of the largest tax cuts in the history of our state.
Let the eagle soar.
Son, go outside and dust yourself off. And when you feel good again, come back in and talk to me. We know what they would have done because we know what they did.
Hero. Coming in here. Hero.
We are going to fight for Missouri values. We are going to defend life. And we are going to protect our constitutional rights.
What I am trying to do to simply make tomorrow just a little bit better than today.
Welcome to the hashtag MoLedge podcast. I'm Ben Peters, filling in for Rachel Herndon Dunn this week. So thanks for putting up with me, everyone. I'm sure you're going to enjoy today's show. I am joined today by lobbyist and attorney, Rich Aubuchon. Thanks for being here, Rich.
You bet. I'm glad to be here. Good morning.
Good morning. It's a wonderful Friday morning. Actually, the weather outside is great.
We don't deserve it. It's too nice to be in Missouri.
Well, it's kind of nice after the rain yesterday, which it's a little overdue, but you know, it's nice to see things kind of cooling off a little bit.
You know, my dad had a saying about nice weather in Missouri. He said, you know, if it was like this all the time, we couldn't afford to live here. And I think that's probably true.
All right, Rich. So first, let's kind of catch up a little bit over, you know, the summer. Obviously, we don't have any special sessions this time around.
Thank
which
goodness.
Means things are a little slowed down for us. So what have you been up to over the summer?
You know, it has been just as busy as regular session for me. You know, I still practice law in addition to all the good lobby work that we get to do. And the lobby work has changed too. So we're now, it's not the time off that you used to have. You know, the previous folks that used to lobby would tell you that, you know, summers were easier, and that has never been the case now that I've seen. And this summer certainly is no exception. We've been very busy.
Have you already been working on some stuff for the upcoming session?
Absolutely. And I would tell you, you know, bills that don't pass in the year when you're excited about them only doubles down the work that you do in the summer and the fall to get them going. You learn your lessons. You do a self-critique of why something didn't pass, and then you double down in the summer. That's exactly what I'm doing.
So I guess the first thing I kind of want to talk about is, looking forward to next year, obviously one of the main things is going to be change in leadership in the House and the Senate. So what's kind of your take on what we might be seeing next year in terms of House leadership?
You know, House leadership, I think the big race, I guess, is pro tem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's probably two main front runners in that race. Time will tell. I wish I had the crystal ball that could give you to who would be the right one.
You'll have to borrow that from Scott.
Right. So, you know, obviously they're good candidates in there, and I'd love to work with any one of them, to tell you the truth. Mm-hmm. But the House, I think, probably much more consistent than what we've seen or will see out of the Senate. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got a known quantity in Elijah as Speaker. We've got a great floor leader in Vescovo. I mean, yeah, the guy's rock solid.
I mean, Vescovo, that first session as the floor leader, it seemed like things went through the House very smoothly. And wasn't a whole lot of issues coming out of the House this year.
I was so impressed watching Vescovo handle the floor. You know, and what I think was best about it was, you know, at least myself as a lobbyist, I didn't have to constantly be in Vescovo's office asking for floor time. You know, he worked with the legislators who had the bills. They did prep. They came to the floor, and it seemed like it was a very well-oiled machine. So I would tell you, you know, as far as next year, I'm really looking forward to seeing what the House can do. They'll be a force to be reckoned with.
So what about the Senate? Obviously, there's going to be some change in leadership there. We're saying goodbye to President Pro Tem Ron Richards. Obviously, Senator Kehoe is out of office, now our Lieutenant Governor. So that's one thing right there, is we'll have a Lieutenant Governor Kehoe presiding over the Senate.
Wouldn't that be neat?
Yeah. So that'd be an interesting change.
You know, having served in that, like, Gov's office, I mean, I can tell you that it's an exciting place to be if you choose to use it for what it is. You know, and so Kehoe will. I mean, he's going to be a very dynamic person in that role. But you're right, the Senate's going to be a very interesting place next year. I am so happy that we will be getting past some of this animosity that we've seen in the Senate. You know, honestly, having the big energy bill passed last year, which I Empire and Liberty, I had a client, and I'm very happy to see the legislation pass for them. But I think that what you will see out of that is a much smaller concept of what energy legislation will be. That caused so much infighting over the last few years, and really hard feelings, because the fights that happened with Naranda, you know, back in the day, that seems to, as far as you know, my perception of it, that seems to be hitting the wayside. And that will change the dynamic of those in the Senate for debates. You know, we watched the Senate Bill 564 hit the floor this year with a huge filibuster, right? Mm-hmm. It just took the wind.
Yep.
You know, no pun intended for you know wind projects, but it just took the wind out of the sails for the Senate. It took so much of the strength to get that bill done. And it just really wasn't the appetite after that to hit big, big, big issues.
Right, and that filibuster came so early in the session, too, so it really seemed to just, I mean, it kind of burned everyone out just to start things off, and then...
It did. It was a heart stopper, too. I mean, at any point in time, it felt like, you know, we were one bad discussion away from a dead bill, but I'll tell you what, both sides stayed into it, and... You know, I'm very happy that we got that done, but that changes the dynamic of next year's debates. You know, look what else passed. You know, labor issues. You know, we've got you know, paycheck protection off the table. We've got this issue about, you know, having to do maintenance work for counties off the table.
Yep.
Okay. Well, what's left? You know, I think that's a great question for those folks who are going to be in leadership next year. You know, you've got some really strong dynamic folks in the Senate who are vying for leadership, and I think they all have a good following. So it will be very interesting to watch the Senate leadership.
Well, everyone who's kind of looking at the Senate leadership, they all have their own kind of qualities, their own strengths that could definitely be good for any of those open positions. So it'll be interesting to see who kind of takes the lead and who ends up as pro tem, who ends up as, you know, the floor leader. So it's going to be very interesting to see how that plays out, but like you said, the animosity, too. This is kind of a fresh start for everyone whenever they come back in next year.
I hope that the Senate takes up that mantra that full and fair debate is open, that the answer is not always no, even on tough issues, maybe even issues that they don't agree on, as individuals, that they can stand up and work through those things in the Senate. That's what the Senate is made for. Mm-hmm. You know, the answer is not always no. And I think what we've seen here, at least this last couple of years, is this, you know, animosity, this obstinance of no. That to me, I think, is the most maddening for my clients. Is, you know, they look and say, well, why can't you get that done? Well, you know, have you met the senator who doesn't like this issue? Then they're going to kill it, and here's why. You know, and it's hard to explain those issues to folks who haven't been in the trench on that, but you're right. It's a chance to hit, you know, control alt delete, and I think we've got a great opportunity for us ahead of us with you know, Governor Parsons now, who's got great relationships with everybody in the House and the Senate, and also with Kehoe, you know, at the dais, you know, if he wants to be there, along with whoever gets to be pro tem and floor leader. I think you're exactly right. We've got a great opportunity for us to set a new path.
Well, in theory, I mean, this is probably the best relationship the Senate's had with the standing governor over the last, I don't know, decade?
Yeah, going back, you know, yeah, it's certainly with Nixon, those years. It's hard to remember that was 8 years.
Yeah.
You know, and having served in that role in the past, you know, it's been a much longer time since I've done it, you know, and think, gosh, that was 8 years of Nixon. You know, he's now practicing law and doing his thing. And
he's been staying busy. He's been on some pretty high-profile cases there, too.
Yeah, he struck some gold, too, so more power to him. More power to him.
So, obviously, like we said, it's going to be a change in the Senate next year. Obviously, new leadership, maybe some better relations with...
Probably focuses on the outcome of some of these Senate races that are, you know, who gets to be leaders. You know, who's cultivated those relationships with Tony Lukemeyer, Harry Roberts, you know, Cindy O'Loughlin, Redmond, you name it, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, those races are competitive races for primaries, which will ultimately decide the outcome of the Senate leadership.
Well, the thing about those races, too, is that they have the candidates that are running in those races, they have some really big shoes to fill. Like, You've got to find a new person to take over where Senator Munslinger was. That's a really big role.
You know, Munsey was so dynamic. I remember the first bill that I worked with him on in the Senate was a bill called TPAC. Mm-hmm. No one really knows what that is unless you're working on it, but it's a bill that we ultimately passed again this year, dealing with private attorney generals. Mm-hmm. Literally a bill that he was handed on the last day to file, he passed that year. I mean, that is a dynamic person to be able to work on issues like that. He not only handled big business issues, he turned around and handled huge ag issues.
Yeah.
I mean, you're exactly right. The guy was very dynamic, huge shoes to fill.
Well, he encompassed so many things under what he was willing to file, what he was willing to sponsor, and he's really well-known, well-liked, and his ability to talk to everyone.
True statesman.
Yeah.
True statesman. And also, you can't ignore that he had great staff in Pat Thomas.
Yes.
I mean, she works her tail off. She works very hard. She's smart and a great staffer. You know, the Senate would be best to have a lot of folks like her. And there are many others like that in the Senate that are very qualified and work very hard.
I remember the first time I actually met Pat Thomas. I was working in the Senate trying to do some stories, and I had just a raging headache. And I texted my editor asking, where can I get some Advil or something? And she goes, just go to Munslinger's office and see if Pat has anything. I go in there and walk in and look at Pat, and I go, are you Pat? She goes, yes. I said, I'm Ben with Missouri Times, and please tell me you have some Advil. And she goes, oh, honey, don't you worry. I got you covered. So, yeah, it's a great staff.
Pat's been taking care of me for well over 20 years, it seems like. So she's great to have in there. But you're right. The next shoes to fill, Kehoe's.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy was a machine at raising money.
Mm-hmm.
Machine. And that's what the floor leader needs to be doing.
Yep.
And for better or worse, that's that role that Senate campaign needs to fill for them to be able to keep the majorities. Look, the minority's not sitting still. Look at Jill Shute. Look at the numbers she's posted.
She's been phenomenal in raising.
Phenomenal. I mean, you can't ignore that.
No. I mean, she said, let's put it like this. Off the floor, she is great at raising money. She is absolutely outstanding at what she can do. But on the floor, she's just as vicious, and she's got as much fight in her as anybody.
And it honestly has been good to work with on issues. Mm-hmm. Even issues that she has a heartfelt feeling about, she comes to resolution. It reminds me much of dealing with Callahan when he was in the Senate. Always knew where he was going, always was on the path. There was always an exit. There was always an issue that he wanted to get done, and he let it go when he was done. So he and Julio always did a great job at that. Gina's also very good to work with as well.
Mm.
To pass a bill, not only takes the majority, it takes the minority to sit down.
Yes, it does.
So let's be fair that there's a lot of folks that you have to work with. And, I truly believe that, next year is a great opportunity for us to, have full and fair debate, but also, get some of these big issues off the table that have kind of floundered this year.
Well, I think that's probably the next question there is that, to have full and fair debate on these issues, the question really is what's left on the plate? Because Republicans managed to knock off quite a few issues that they've been trying to do for a long time. So.
Very successful year for, virtually every issue that was hanging out there. Even torts passed some bills. Let's be clear. I mean, that business premises bill that Denny Hoskins passed.
Yep.
That's a bill that's hugely important to the business community. Has been for 10 years that we've worked on that. He came up with a good solution, passed a bill literally within minutes of debate.
Mm-hmm.
Did a great behind the scenes work on that. But right behind that is what you're talking about, issues that have been done. Where did we leave off? Some of the big ones. Well, venue is a big one.
Yeah.
And can we be reminded again of the importance of that issue when Johnson & Johnson gets handed almost a $5 billion judgment in Missouri with these are the very same things that we're working to balance the scales on, and yet that issue languished last year. Ultimately, became trade fodder. And honestly, when you get in the last 2 weeks, important issues get traded. That's just how this happens. So, you know, the minority was those who were opposed, I should say, to that legislation were successful in delaying its time to the floor until the last 2 weeks. And once you get in that strike zone, you know, you're exactly right. The opportunity to get traded away for tax policy or for, you know, paycheck protection.
Fuel tax.
I mean, you name it. I mean, it's like working on budget stuff. Everybody's your enemy.
Yeah.
You know? So the trick will be to come next year on issues like venue, like punitive damages, that are hugely important to the business community. Do we have to see another $5 billion judgment to see this? How these things are shaping Missouri's, you know, perception to the country, to the world, that you know, we should be open for business, that we should be a good market for companies to come here, you know, irrespective of right to work. You know, right behind that, when site selectors look at Missouri, it's not just right to work. They look at what's our legal environment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing that has to be a focus for us next year.
So is there any other things that you think are going to be a major topic in terms of legislation that we'll be looking at?
You know, I can see a retirement reform issue for next year. I think that there was good strides this year on some of the ancillary retirement systems out there. Moser's is still probably, you know, looks like they could use something more. And it seems like their buyback program that they used didn't work. They've got good staff with Rhonda now, and she's a true expert on that area. Have worked with her for a long time, so I'm very happy to see their leadership there. And you know, you've got a guy like you know, Treasurer Schmidt.
Yep.
Who is pounding the table asking for, you know, reforms.
Yeah, he's been very hard up on all
very
that.
He's
been very watchful of everything that they've been doing. And now you look at that Moser's board, well, now you've got the House budget chair sitting on it, too.
Yeah.
So Moser's has a scrutinizing eye on him right now.
Yeah, but, you know, circumstances have been handed to them over the past. You know, these decisions are made at the legislature, mm-hmm. and then they're given to Moser's.
Right.
You know, obviously, you know, some of their investments decisions are theirs, but also the board decides that. But Schmidt, I think, is Treasurer Schmidt's on the right path there, and I think is a good leader to be able to handle that. It's a great job for the treasurer to do. Keep an eye on the state's pension.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of employees are relying on that. The promises that have been made to them, and the promises that will be made to the future employees, that they have a good, strong pension in the future.
Well, it just seems like, especially whenever you look at things that Treasurer Schmidt's been kind of doing since taking office, he's been all over the place and just really active in a lot of different things. It seems like maybe he's trying to take that treasurer's role to encompassing a little bit more, and I think that's not a bad thing.
He's been very smart in that job. You know, you never saw him get out in front on all this, you know, nastiness that we saw with the previous governor.
Mm-hmm.
He just stayed on message and stayed on point, and I think he's been a very smart politician in that respect.
So one of the other things I kind of want to talk about was since we're in campaign mode, that's what everyone's kind of talking about.
Yeah,
right,
my pockets are empty.
Well, that's kind of the thing I'm wondering is we're watching all these campaigns. So how do you think that the new rules that were put in effect from Amendment 2, how do you think that's kind of affecting how people are doing things? And is it really having the effect that people thought?
You know, My judgment in doing the you know, making that this assessment that I'm going to tell you is that giving advice to candidates, giving advice to clients on Amendment 2 is like standing on Jell-O.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like it's constantly evolving. It's constantly changing, and I think it has shaken up the campaign finance world such that it may not recover for several years. What we're seeing, though, are these huge loopholes that have completely, you know, changed, and I think probably ruined the ultimate, you know, goal of campaign limits.
Mm-hmm.
And let's focus on those limits: $2,600 per race.
Yep.
Okay, $2,600. Well, now representatives can run twice as much as a senator.
Right.
How is that? You know. Okay. Fine. We'll leave it at that. Primary race is different than a general. An appointed race is different than a primary and a general. So you could, you know, have someone appointed someone then seek the primary, and then someone seek the general, 2600 each whack. Mm-hmm. Okay, did that really change anything? Well, it changed the steps.
Right.
And then the to exempt entirely under the amendment to the corporations that are created for the very purpose of accepting money, and also to allow them to accept corporate donations. Well, that's the truck.
Right.
You know, it seems to me that when I first started looking at these, I thought, oh, these PACs will be a fad. You know, no big deal. No, it's the way of doing business now.
Yep.
And these political action committees that are being set up are leading to less transparency than will ever have been under the previous law, and I think completely runs the gamut of getting rid of any hope of what a campaign finance limit was imposed. And whether you like it or not, people are still accepting $1 million checks. It's just they can't be directly done through the candidate committee. Candidate committee to committee is prohibited. So be it. You know, there's leadership PACs that are created out there, and treasurers are able to spend their money on independent expenditures. What has changed? It's just who. Yeah, I think in many ways, you know, campaign limits are good, and I think that the premise is good, and I think that's why Amendment 2 passed. You know, everybody thought, oh, I'm tired of having money in politics. Well, it hasn't done that. It hasn't had that effect. And we're constantly seeing litigation over it. We're constantly seeing rule changes, of which one was come out, you know, this year. And what's the effect of it? What's the greater good? I don't see it.
So I think that my question then is that we're getting to that 2-year mark once it's been in play right now. So is there legislation that you think is going to come out of this to address some of these problems, or is there answers to these or solutions, or are we just kind of stuck with it?
Well, I think, until you can go back in and file another constitutional change, mm-hmm. whether it comes through the legislature or whether it comes through an IP, the fact is that we're stuck with it. Mm-hmm. And no statute's going to trump that constitution. You can trim around the edges, you can mold it with a statute, but you can't change it. So we have had a piece of legislation that passed dealing with some of the campaign finance work, and yes, I think it helped, but ultimately it takes another constitutional measure to do it, another vote of the people.
Yep.
And you know, we're loath to acknowledge that we've made a mistake when we vote as a group.
Fair enough. Well, Rich, I'm going to tell you right now that we're at that point in the podcast where it's time to lighten things up a little bit.
Let's do it.
And have a little bit of fun. So obviously, Becky and Rachel are not here. Usually, they do 5 questions, so I'm going to try and spitball some 5 questions here. But obviously, I'm going to probably gear this to maybe some things that you and I are a little bit more interested than perhaps, say, some other podcast hosts.
Okay.
So the first thing I kind of want to actually touch on is obviously, anybody who knows me knows that, number one, I am a huge Kansas City Chiefs fan.
Excellent.
So my question is, have you been following training camp since it just started yesterday? Have you been watching anything, seeing anything out of camp?
You know, nothing that I could share, you know that. I will tell you this about training camp. The Chiefs take that very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And those players who are there, some of them will not make the team.
Yep.
And so this is real work for these guys. And, we as fans, go watch those things, and we're excited to see him play in Missouri, which that was gargantuan to get him back in the Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you who haven't seen it, you should go see it, training camp. It's worthwhile.
Yeah.
And it's free. Just go. Enjoy it. It's a great opportunity to have professional football team training here. I would tell you this: the Chiefs had great opportunities last year. I think they can only get better.
I think they're going to see some growing pains this year, which is it's very expectant, especially when you're looking at a new quarterback, obviously a transitioning in. So that'll be some interesting things. But I think that they've really moved a lot to really just turn that offense into something high power. I mean, some of the moves they've made, it's going to be a very interesting year for them.
There's a lot of energy in that stadium when the Chiefs run out on the field. And you know, the players that take the field after training camp, of which they're doing, you know, they're preparing for the job.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, some of those players won't get an opportunity to play, but going to a stadium where 75,000 people can scream and shout, it's a pretty amazing feeling to watch.
Well, I mean, to go play for the fans of, well, the world's loudest outdoor stadium.
That's right.
So that's something else. So I'm going to touch up on, since it's summer, I think another thing that we need to ask about is, you know, everyone's always out grilling and barbecuing. So what would you say is the Rich Aubuchon specialty whenever it comes to summer food, grilling, barbecue, whatever it be?
Well, I've got a host of kids, you know, that so that my brood likes hot dogs and hamburgers.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were to ask Betsy, she likes steak well done. You know, she grew up on a ranch and she likes steak well done.
Yeah, that's...
You know, I like steak that moves back at
yeah.
me. So, you know, I have to grill in stages, you know, so the
you get Rich's steak done first, then you get...
The burgers get well done, you know, the hot dogs, you know, look like char burgers at the end of it, yeah. We generally do the hot things the kids can eat. You know,
right.
It's easy up, but that's it.
I'm gonna say my family also really enjoys the hot dogs. My nephews will always insist that I grill hot dogs when I'm cooking anything else. And my mom has a habit where she will come down and see while you're grilling to make sure that the hot dogs are black enough.
Hey, look, I'll tell you this. If we could get chicken nuggets on the grill, my kids would like that too.
You know, if you figure out a way, you let me know. I'm going to test it on my nephews.
Yeah, that's half their diet, it seems like, anymore. Chicken nuggets and fries.
Oh, yeah. So let's go to question three. Obviously, I spend a lot of time listening to music whenever I'm not on the phone. So what's kind of the go-to music from whenever Rich Aubuchon's gearing up for work? At the Capitol.
Oh, gearing up for work.
Yeah.
You know, Toccata and Fugue, you know, but the, if I'm listening to my own music, just hanging out, it's Kenny Chesney.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I dig Chesney, Jimmy Buffett, something like that. Just light, keep it fun. Gotta love the Eagles.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
You gotta love the Eagles.
I mean, if you were to look at my phone, that's what you'd see is, you know, old school kind of, bumbly rock. And I like a lot of Chesney's older stuff, too.
All right, so another question. Top vacation spots. Did you get to go on anything this year?
You know, I've been so busy, I haven't had a chance. You know, Betsy's been crazy busy, too.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids have been running all over the place. But our favorite place is Key West.
Key West?
I mean, if we're going to take time off and go do something, Key West is our spot. Now, I'm not into all the weird stuff. I don't even notice it. I have to tell you, I don't even notice all the stuff that goes on because we're focused on just, you know, the beauty of it. But there's a lot of cool other keys up and down there, like Deer Key that's neat, and you know, Marathon. So keys are our spot that we like.
All right, and then for the last question, I'm just gonna have to ask you this one because I try to judge people based on this. So, your top five movies of all time.
Oh. Top
I can,
one.
I can give you top one, top three, but
okay.
Something like that.
Top Gun.
Top
How
Gun.
How could it not be, right?
Oh.
I remember having the VHS tape that I wore out. Mm-hmm. You know, Top Gun is right up there. I love Apocalypse Now.
Oh, it's so good.
Right?
It's so good.
Super Troopers.
Did you get to see the sequel?
I have not.
I haven't either. I've been waiting for in college, my cousin and I both used to watch that a lot. So we've
Super
been waiting troopers. For waiting for the right time to go and see the sequel because we have to watch it together.
Right.
Like, you have to watch it with your old college roommate, right?
So, you know, anything Star Wars, Star Trek, cool.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you what, beyond that, anymore, since we've had kids, like, I'll watch The Incredibles before I'll watch some cartoon before I end up watching any movie of mine. So,
yep.
You know, you name it, any cartoon that you know, takes longer than 20 minutes, that, you know, that's been our, that would probably follow anymore because I've been trained so much.
So you're saying that you've become a giant Disney fan in the last couple of years?
I guess so. Well, you know, but, you know, that's just part of giving of yourself. You know, you stray from the Top Guns and the Super Troopers movies to go to the next round of movies, which the kids like. So.
Well, don't worry. Once they get to a certain age, then you bring back the Top Gun. Because I remember whenever I got to that right age, Dad's like, all right, you're old enough now. It's time to watch these movies.
Well, now, Animal House, it actually reminded me of going to Westminster. So Animal House was one movie that I loved, too. So that would be probably my number four.
I was going to say, that was one of the ones that Dad whipped out. He's like, you're going to watch Animal House? You're going to watch Blazing Saddles?
Faber was very much like Westminster when I went to school. I promise you that. They could have just changed the name. It would have been Westminster College, and that would have been about the same.
All right, Rich. Well, I think that's going to do it for us today. Yeah. Thanks for being on. I appreciate you coming. Obviously, we'll be back next week with another podcast, probably Monday morning, recapping this current week. So until then, I will let you guys go, and we'll talk to you next week.
Ben, take care, Ben.